This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Did you know that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
100,000 cases per day. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Wednesday, July 1st. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
The country's top infectious disease expert is warning that coronavirus infections could get worse if people continue ignoring mask and distancing guidelines.
More states are putting restrictions in place ahead of the July 4th weekend. For example, Delaware is closing beach bars on Friday.
With an assist from a government stimulus package during the pandemic, stocks completed their best quarter in more than 20 years.
And food banks bracing for a second wave of demand related to coronavirus layoffs and furloughs.
What's happening is food banks are seeing demand that they've never seen before. And these are food banks that have been around some for 30 years. And before the pandemic, one pantry I spoke to, they were serving about 91,000 people a month. That's jumped to about 123,000 people a month.
Elizabeth Buchwald at MarketWatch on how food banks expect higher needs as federal unemployment benefits expire. The country's top infectious disease doctor has a warning for Americans. Keep ignoring the guidelines about wearing masks and social distancing, and the nation could see coronavirus cases climb to 100,000 per day. That would be 2.5 times the current number. Dr. Anthony Fauci and other health officials testified yesterday before a Senate committee in Washington.
In other areas of the country, we're now seeing a disturbing surge of infections that looks like it's a combination, but one of the things is an increase in community spread. And that's something that I'm really quite concerned about.
Separately, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell yesterday pledged to consider additional relief to prevent lasting damage to labor markets and businesses as states struggle to contain the pandemic. Also, the FDA has outlined conditions for approving a COVID-19 vaccine, including a requirement that any vaccine be at least 50% more effective than a placebo. That's a routine benchmark for flu vaccines. California, Texas, and Arizona have emerged as new epicenters of the pandemic, reporting record increases in COVID-19 cases. They've more than doubled in June in at least 10 states, including Texas and Florida, according to a count from Reuters. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, though, said the state was not going back on reopening.
We're not going back, closing things. I don't think that really is what's driving it. I mean, people going to business is not what's driving it. I think when you see the younger folks, I think a lot of it is more just social interactions.
Florida reported more than 6,000 new coronavirus cases yesterday, high for the last 30 days, but sharply lower than the record of more than 9,500 cases reported on Saturday. Elsewhere, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut added travelers from 8 states who must self-quarantine for 14 days upon arrival. Delaware is closing beach bars on Friday ahead of the July 4th weekend, thanks to an uptick in cases. Also, Europe has extended a travel ban for Americans for at least 2 weeks. Let's get a deeper look at how Arizona is coping with the coronavirus surges. We're joined now by Congressman David Schweikert, who represents North Phoenix and most of Scottsdale. Congressman, what's going on in your state?
Well, it's one of those, been trying to pay attention to the actual underlying numbers. And it's one of those moments where it gets a little uncomfortable to talk about, because if you lay it out in a zip code map, there's real concentrations in sort of the agricultural areas of Maricopa County, and zip codes that are more in the south, southwest portion. So you actually see hot spots and then large swaths of the county where the uptick doesn't actually exist or is quite minimal. So it's a really interesting case study of when you see concentrations of the flare-up.
All right. So that said, does it make sense then to close down the gyms, bars, restaurants, nightclubs and postpone school to the middle of August?
You know, I struggle with some of that because you know the governor is in a tough position. You need data to know you're doing the right thing, but some of that data doesn't exist. I mean, how do you tell me how many transmissions happened at a gym, particularly if the gym was following the rules, and sterilizing the equipment, and keeping social distancing? You know, when you see the discussions of the Scottsdale nightlife, you know, Scottsdale is one of the great nightlife places in the country. Was this flare-up coming from people going to bars, or was it flare-up people coming to protests? Or was it the afternoon Sunday barbecue tradition in some of my Hispanic neighborhoods? And there's the crappy thing we're doing. We're sort of making policy in the dark, where we don't have enough of sort of that tracing data saying, hey, it turns out it's the communal housing in parts of the agricultural area of the state, or it's barbecues that are taking place in this zip code, or where is the transmission coming from?
So is Phoenix itself a problem that you know of? I know that's not technically your district, but you border
it, obviously. No, well, I basically have the whole top part of Phoenix.
Okay.
So the north, remember, Phoenix is a monstrous city. Maricopa County is the fourth most populous county in the United States. And Arizona is a unique state because we're probably the most urbanized state in the country because so much of the state is, you know, tribally owned or federally owned or parks. So we live basically in one big metroplex. 64% is just in the Phoenix area.
Wow.
So it makes a great case study. And you actually sort of see the county sort of split in half, where the top half transmissions appears to be sort of with growing but within the mean, and then other parts in the south-southwest of the county having some real flare-ups.
Wow. We're speaking with Arizona Congressman David Schweikert, represents North Phoenix, including almost all of Scottsdale, talking about the surge of coronavirus cases. So you referenced the media and some of the pictures and video that they show sometimes, which may not be representative of these flare-ups. Do you feel that there's other stuff that's not being communicated?
It's hard to talk about and get our heads around. So what happens if you had a real spike of positives, but it was falling down on the demographic table? So it's younger people who are much less likely to be in the hospital are much more likely to have a positive outcome. And so trying to sort of figure out, and that's why if you want to geek out on some of this, you sort of try to look at ICU bed occupancy, but then you try to say how much of that ICU bed occupancy is there because of a COVID case.
Okay, yeah.
And not because someone waited 3 months to finally get the hernia operation, and it turned out to be a much more dangerous operation because electives were postponed. So you got a lot of other dynamics on those ICU bed occupancies. So just trying to understand it and get it right and make policy not by feelings but by the math that's given to you.
On a somewhat related note, Congressman, do you think we need another economic stimulus package?
I think we're going to need to do things in the tax regulatory code that promotes a couple things, promotes how you organize your business, organize, you know, your concern safely, and then also that encouragement for everyone to sort of open up their billfold a bit and make investments, sort of start investing back into the economy. And so that's less of reaching into the Treasury, borrowing a bunch of money, and carpet bombing the country, but more building the tax code and some of the rules so that those animal spirits can sort of open up again.
Thanks, David. Arizona Congressman David Schweikert. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. There are calls for President Trump to consider imposing new economic sanctions on Russia if a reported Russian effort to pay the Taliban to kill U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan is confirmed. Mr. Trump has been under pressure over reports that a Russian military intelligence unit had offered bounties for U.S. and allied soldiers and later reported that he received a written briefing on it in February. California Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff.
Many of us do not understand his affinity for that autocratic ruler who means our nation ill.
After the president initially said he was not briefed, the White House said the president was not personally briefed, but did not address whether he had received a written report. Spokeswoman Kayleigh McEnany.
We are here today having this discussion because of an irresponsible, anonymous leak to the New York Times. There is no good scenario as a result of this New York Times report.
The Times and the Washington Post say the White House knew of the bounty allegations but had not briefed the president or acted on them. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Dr. Anthony Fauci says coronavirus cases could soar if Americans don't start following public health recommendations.
We are now having 40-plus thousand new cases a day. I would not be surprised if we go up to 100,000 a day if this does not turn around, and so I am very concerned.
Asked to forecast the outcome of recent surges in some states, the nation's leading infectious disease expert said he believes it will be very disturbing.
Number two.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says his state is not going back on reopening, adding that the increase in cases was caused by young people out socializing rather than people visiting businesses. Florida reported more than 6,000 new coronavirus cases on Tuesday.
Number three.
China has approved an experimental COVID-19 vaccine for use in its military after early clinical trial data suggested it was safe and spurred immune responses, but before larger trials that will test whether the vaccine can protect against coronavirus infections. This marks the first time any country has approved a candidate vaccine for military use. Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden criticized President Trump's handling of the pandemic, saying Trump is in retreat.
Donald Trump failed us. Month after month, as many of us urged him to step up and do his job, he failed us.
In a speech in Wilmington, Delaware, Biden recounted what he cast as Trump's missteps from his early dismissals of the virus to his more recent refusals to wear a mask. The 75-year-old protester who was pushed to the ground by police officers in Buffalo has been released from the hospital almost 4 weeks after being injured. Martin Gugino was attending a protest on June 4th when he was pushed to the ground by a line of police officers clearing out the area. He fell and hit the back of his head, fracturing his skull. Gugino's attorney says his client will be recovering at an undisclosed location to preserve his privacy. The world lost an entertainment icon with the death of Carl Reiner. The actor, writer, and director was 90. He often collaborated with Mel Brooks.
Besides all that, what do you deduct?
I deduct my wife.
Well, everybody deducts their wife as an exemption.
Not as an exemption.
Well, as a deduction.
Not as a deduction.
And what?
As a depreciation.
Reiner described Brooks as his best friend of 70 years, dinner partner, and fellow Jeopardy watcher.
Thank you, Jen. Thanks for joining us. Food banks nationwide were stretched to their limits in April. Now, they're bracing for an even bigger surge in August as the $600 unemployment checks from the federal government come to an end, absent more action from Congress. Here to go in-depth with the eye-popping demand numbers is Elizabeth Buchwald, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. Elizabeth, what's happening?
What's happening is food banks are seeing demand that they've never seen before, and these are food banks that have been around some for 30 years, and before the pandemic, one pantry I spoke to, they were serving about 91,000 people a month. That's jumped to about 123,000 people a month. They said demand started slowing a little bit in April once Americans got their stimulus checks and got that extra $600 in unemployment benefits. But some other pantries I spoke to, one in Hawaii, they're just seeing demand keeps jumping and it hasn't stopped any time.
Boy, that's, I mean, the one in Nevada that you talked about, that's almost a 50% jump. And those are the folks, too, that are saying August could be even worse than what it's been?
Yeah, they have to brace themselves because Nevada is the state with the highest rate of unemployment. It's about 25% right now of their labor force that is unemployed. So if you're taking that population and they're all going to be losing $600 if Congress and the Senate if they don't act on extending 600, or there's been a couple other proposals too, if none of that happens, they're going to essentially see their paychecks go down by $600. And obviously what that means is that's less money to spend themselves in food stores and for other expenses.
Boy, so how do food banks prepare for that?
It's very difficult. In the beginning, when more restaurants were closed in states that were slower to reopen, they were able to reach out to them and get some of their excess food that would expire anyway. But what's become harder is now that places are reopened, they have less to spare. And also Americans, we know, are shopping more in bulk at supermarkets. So one thing that all the three food banks I spoke to have said has been very helpful is the Department of Agriculture. They have this emergency food assistance program where they purchase food on behalf of states and distribute it based on levels of poverty and unemployment. So that's been one thing that's been helpful, and also partnering with local farmers.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Buchwald, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. Her piece is called Food Banks Are Anticipating a Second Wave of Demand When the Extra $600 in Unemployment Benefits Expires Next Month. This is complicated, too, I would imagine, or was at least in the spring, complicated by the fact that kids were out of school, and a lot of those kids perhaps got meals from school.
Yes, definitely. I think all three of the food banks that I spoke to were saying they have these programs where they'd work with schools and distribute food that way, but because they're not in school, first, demand is extremely unpredictable, and second, they don't know how long kids are going to be out of school, so which districts are going to be reopening. All of that is unknown, so that complicates matters further.
What'd you hear from Hawaii?
From Hawaii, that one was a very interesting interview because unlike all other states, which are obviously connected to land, they're on an island there. So they were having a lot of difficulty. There were delays in shipments, and you're all competing for this limited supply of food. So that just made things even harder for them. And the food that would go to supermarkets, they weren't getting as much of.
Man, thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Buchwald, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
The news without the nonsense. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday, July 1. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. California, Texas, and Arizona emerge as the new coronavirus epicenters. Mississippi has officially retired its flag with the Confederate emblem. Minimum wage hikes take effect today in Illinois, Nevada, and Oregon. Cell phone driving laws begin in Idaho, Indiana, and South Dakota. Convicted rapist Harvey Weinstein has reached a nearly $19 million settlement with his accusers. And the 9-year-old Michigan girl who's become a mask-making machine. That story in about 20 minutes. In a development late last night, the Senate passed by unanimous consent a 5-week extension for the Paycheck Protection Program, setting a new deadline of August 8. The change would need to be approved by the House, then signed into law by President Trump. This gives small firms a second shot at pandemic relief funds, since $130 billion has been left unused. More about how the program has fared from Erica Werner, congressional reporter at The Washington Post. Erica set this up.
Right. Well, as your listeners may know, the PPP was originally created in the $2 trillion CARES Act that Congress passed in March. It was originally funded at about $350 billion, which was gobbled up very quickly. And an additional $310 billion was added to the program in April. And what lawmakers didn't expect was that that money was not as quickly taken up. They kept changing the rules to try to make it easier in certain ways, but I think that also had the effect of confusing potential borrowers in some cases. And as a result, we have $130 billion left in the program.
Okay, so some of the repurposing proposals for these funds are what, Erica?
Well, this is all going to get worked out in late July when Congress will return from a 2-week recess that starts next week. And that's when they're going to put together what Mitch McConnell has said will be the last major coronavirus relief bill. So it's going to cover multiple areas, one of them being
small businesses the PPP. So there's a number of proposals floating out there. The lead sponsor of the whole initiative is Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. He wants to expand uses for the money, allowing more types of businesses to apply, for example, chambers of commerce. He wants to focus the money on smaller businesses, so businesses with 300 employees or less specifically, whereas the program originally targeted businesses with 500 employees or less, and make a number of other changes to try to draw a wider range of businesses and specifically smaller businesses into the program.
Yeah. All right. So he'd need legislative cooperation, obviously. Is it there?
Well, it will likely be there. It's going to take a lot of pushing and shoving and horse trading, as these things always do. But there is widespread bipartisan consensus on the need and the desire to help small businesses. And certainly no one wants $130 billion that Congress has already appropriated to go unused.
Right.
So it's just a question of, you know, how you do that. And it'll take some time before the answer to that emerges.
We're speaking with Erica Werner, congressional reporter at The Washington Post. Her piece is called Paycheck Protection Program Nears End with $130 billion left unused and lawmakers eye next steps. Generally speaking, what's the feeling? Has this been an effective program? What are you hearing from small business owners?
Well, there are definitely small businesses that have been helped by this program. There's no doubt about that. The administration says that tens of millions of jobs have been saved by this program, which offers forgivable loans and requires that the majority of the money be spent on payroll. So it's targeted specifically to help small businesses keep employees on payroll, keep them paid. We don't know the specifics on who has gotten the money and how many people really have been helped. That's an issue that is being debated, with the administration reluctant to release that information, that data, and Democrats in particular, but also Republicans, pushing for that. The Washington Post and other news outlets have actually sued the administration trying to get that information. So we don't know the scope of the relief really that has been offered by this program or has been received by small business owners. We have a lot of anecdotal evidence from interviews with small business owners who have been helped. As you know, in the early days of the program, there was a lot of confusion, a lot of businesses that couldn't get loans initially, but ultimately many have been helped. We don't know how many.
Thanks, Erica. Erica Werner, congressional reporter at The Washington Post. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, when you just can't line up your gas tank with the gas pump. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It is time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we've all had this happen a time or two. We're driving a new car or someone else's car and have a moment where we have to remember what side the tank is when we pull into the gas station. Can't imagine it took anyone listening four tries to figure it out, however, and none of us thankfully had it caught on video. That wasn't the case, unfortunately, for a young woman whose multiple attempts at filling up her car has become the funniest video of the week and gone viral on social media. The unidentified woman is seen pulling her Dodge minivan up to the pump to find out that the gas cap is on the opposite side of the pump. She then backs up, tries again, and still has it wrong. Finally, after four attempts and some much-needed help, she manages to line things up correctly. Of course, as many on the internet have pointed out, all she needed to do was check the gas gauge for that handy arrow which tells you which side of the vehicle the gas cap is on.
Not even sure that that was going to help her. It just didn't seem like she understood how to line the vehicle up.
Yeah. It's the spinning of the car around several times is the funniest part. And the looks on her face as she's like, she, you know, gets out of the car, looks and says, and still can't, like, is baffled by the fact that the cap is on the wrong side.
Yeah.
That she's sure she's got it right, and she jumps out and is ready to put the pump, her put the gas pump in her tank, and can't figure out why she can't do it.
As these things sometimes do, they take on new lives,
yes.
Right? So I just happened to look, because I saw Rex Chapman post this yesterday on Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, now Frank Caliendo, the comedian.
Who does all the impressions
yes. and impersonations.
Yes.
Is doing his voices of Pat Summerall and John Madden calling play-by-play of the woman as she tries to find which side of the car belongs alongside yes. the tank. It is very funny.
That's how you know you've reached a certain height, right? And then yes. your internet fame.
Yes.
And assuming, Gordon, we have a season, we know things are going to look very different in New England this year. We already knew that Tom Brady had taken his talents to Tampa for the season, and we learned this week that Cam Newton would be suiting up for the Patriots. Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman was excited to welcome his new QB to town, tweeting at Newton with the hashtag, Let's Work. So, guess who caught wind of Edelman tweeting at his new quarterback? Yep, that would be Tom Brady, who, up until this point, had thrown Edelman every one of his 36 career touchdown passes. Brady took to Twitter to respond to Edelman, writing simply, I will always be your number one. He does
great.
Not miss a beat, Tom
no.
Brady, when it comes to social media.
He is excellent on social media, no doubt about that. So, but it'll take some work between Cam Newton and Justin Edelman to reach 36 touchdowns.
I would think so.
And the way the Jets defense is lining up, I mean, it's not going to happen in New York. Let's just say that much.
We're just happy for Edelman because, you know, nobody was more despondent, I don't think, about Tom Brady leaving than Edelman was. So at least he's got a new partner.
Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Summer vacations look very different this year as many Americans avoid things like flying, taking cruises, and staying at hotels. And while many people are canceling travel plans entirely, others battling cabin fever are renting RVs in unprecedented numbers. And the trend is expected to continue through the 4th of July weekend. The peer-to-peer vehicle renting company RV Share says that RV bookings have increased by more than 1,600% since early April. CEO John Gray told USA Today that the RV rental movement is driven by travelers seeking greater control over where they stay and go. Even though some airlines are loosening restrictions, travel experts say people are still wary of taking a plane and booking hotel rooms, which could be boosting interest in RVs. Instead of driving to crowded cities to watch fireworks displays, most RV renters are headed to secluded destinations and focusing on the great outdoors. Yellowstone National Park, Grand Canyon National Park, and Zion National Park are among the most popular destinations. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Senate has unanimously voted to extend a $660 billion lending program in an effort to help small businesses that have been hit hard by the coronavirus, extending a lifeline just as it was due to expire. The House must also approve the extension, which would keep the Paycheck Protection Program operating through August 8th.
Number two.
Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell told lawmakers a full economic recovery is unlikely until people feel safe going out and about. Congress has signed off on about $3 trillion in aid so far, but Powell says more will be needed. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin also appeared at the hearing.
We are in a strong position to recover because the administration, working with Congress on a bipartisan basis to pass legislation and provide liquidity to markets in record time.
Number three.
Lawmakers are calling on President Trump to consider imposing new economic sanctions on Russia if a reported Russian effort to pay the Taliban to kill U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan was confirmed. Trump has been under pressure over a New York Times report that a Russian military intelligence unit had offered the bounties and later reported that he received a written briefing on the matter in February. Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney of Wyoming.
America's adversaries should know, and they should have no doubt, that any targeting of U.S. forces by Russians, by anyone else, will face a very swift and deadly response.
After Trump initially said he was not briefed on the matter, the White House said Trump was not personally briefed. but did not address whether he had received a written report, read it, and why he had not responded more aggressively, if so. Hong Kong police have made their first arrest under a new national security law imposed by China's central government, arresting a protester for carrying a flag calling for Hong Kong's independence. Police say they arrested over 30 people on various charges, from unlawful assembly to the violation of the new law. Well, as the NBA wrestles with all kinds of issues as it plans a restart in Orlando, here's yet another one. What to do about bad language on TV? Tape-delayed games is even under consideration as players take to the court with no fans. While some fans would prefer to hear the unfiltered audio from the court, corporate sponsors may not be quite so thrilled.
Delayed games on TV.
Yes.
Come on.
I don't know what they're going to do. A lot of bleeping.
Yeah. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Business is booming at the Friendly Chupacabra Face Covering Company in Oakland Township, Michigan. 9-year-old Michaela Munyon, the CEO and sole seamstress of the unincorporated operation, has already produced more than 500 face masks for healthcare workers, restaurant employees, and friends for free during the coronavirus pandemic. Good story from the Washington Post, which profiled her. Michaela learned to sew during an after-school program, then heard about the shortage of personal protective equipment at a hospital and put it all together. Meanwhile, Michaela found a YouTube video about batch sewing and taught herself to make roughly 50 masks in 2 hours. She supplied them to a local home health agency, one of her favorite pizza joints, the pastors at her church, and her dad's real estate office. Her masks are available for pickup and delivery, and while most of her clientele is in Michigan, she has filled orders from places as far as Arizona and Texas. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.